Hey there, this is Flora Lichtman, and you're listening to Science Friday. Today we are hitting the streets, the dusty, ancient streets, looking for clues about the origins of democracy. Researchers writing in the journal Science Advances explain how the design of ancient temples, plazas, cities can tell us how a civilization was governed. So what does ancient architecture reveal about democracy, and do the democratic design principles hold true today? Here to chip away at some of these big questions is Dr. Jake Holland Lulowitz, anthropologist and assistant professor at the Pennsylvania State University. Hey, Jake, welcome to Science Friday.
Hi, guys. Thanks so much for having me.
What does democratic design or democratic architecture look like?
Oh, yeah. I don't know if we can call the architecture democratic, but it certainly reflects kind of ethos and our institutions, which themselves are democratic. And so when we're thinking of democracy, I think what we're thinking of are places that are inclusive, that can hold a lot of people, that are designed to facilitate deliberation and conversation.
Give me some examples from the sites that you looked at.
Sure. At least where I work in southeastern North America, you know, we're looking for big, huge, round structures. You know, they're much bigger than a house, right? They can fit more than one important family. Maybe they can fit everyone in the village. Maybe they can fit family representatives from lots of villages coming together. And the shape, the circle is really important too, because when you're sitting in a circle and we find evidence for benches around the walls, you can see everyone else, right? No one is necessarily front and center, right? It's not like a classroom where all of my students are looking at me and I'm telling them stuff that they maybe need to know. But it really reflects basic logic of decision-making, in that deliberation and consensus being more important than top-down action.
What about plazas, or like the big piazza? How do you read that?
Yeah. Plazas are really interesting, and I think they're really complex too, because they can serve, I think, lots of different purposes. I work on societies who are the descendants of the Muscogee Creek Nation. And square grounds are, you know, center to social and political life. They're where people gather to reaffirm, you know, relationships and strengthen bonds between people and eat great food. And looking at things like the size of plazas, again, can tell us, you know, who's meant to be in that space. How many people are meant to get together? You know, is the whole village around the plaza, or is the plaza associated maybe with a palace, right? Mm. Which could maybe tell us something different about what the purpose of this open space is, right?
Yeah, I know I'm getting into the dusty details here, but like, is it a correlation? Like, you see, you know, round buildings and open plazas that are not associated with a palace with democracies? Or is it that you're like, oh, these kinds of spaces tell us that there were democratic principles at play?
Yeah, I think they certainly are a great feature for us to identify and begin, as archaeologists, begin to interpret these societies as more collectively or democratically oriented. You know, on their own, they don't tell us everything, but I think they're really great hints.
Mm. And what about on the flip side? Is there architecture that suggests autocratic government?
Yeah. Well, I think it looks like, number one, it looks like the absence of those kind of big spaces that can fit a huge percentage of the population. And it is the prominence and centrality of palaces. It may be things like the, you know, wildly unproportional size of a ruler's house compared to everyone else in the society's house. Those are the kinds of things we might look for to start making an argument that maybe this isn't the most collective or bottom-up, you know, decision-making system that we have going on here.
How would the White House read?
This is interesting. I was actually thinking about this morning because, you know, I think if we just found the White House, we might say, well, actually, we might say a few things. We might say, oh, the guy who lives there, he has a lot of power, right? And this is not unlike how archaeologists have approached the past in many ways, right? We find a big pyramid or a huge palace maybe, and we're like, wow, they have a lot of power, right? But once we start maybe looking broader and kind of contextualizing this, right, we find like, hey, right down the road from this White House, there's actually a much larger building and it has way more seats. And, you know, this is the same where I work in the Southeast where, okay, we have maybe earthen mounds where there may be important people living on top of them. But, you know, right next to the mound, there's a big round structure. And so we find, you know, with the White House, obviously we know about our system of governance. We know it's based on checks and balances and these different arms of the government. And we actually find those same kinds of checks and balances in the archaeological record too.
Yeah, in theory. In theory, that's...
In theory, yeah.
Okay, so you looked at over 30 places. Did you have big take-homes about the origins of democracy or how it was practiced?
Oh, yeah, I think so, yeah. And I think maybe for a lot of people in other disciplines and even the public, I think what we found is really exciting and really fun and I think really hopeful too.
Hit us. Hit us with some
you
hope.
You know, we found that, you know, democracy has really deep roots, right? It's not a modern invention. You know, the Greeks may have come up with particular kinds of institutions and particular forms of collective governance. But all over the world, societies everywhere have figured this out, right? We find examples, at least in our paper, for democracies in Asia, democracies in North America, democracies in Mesoamerica and Central America. And alternatively, we find autocracies in all those places, including places like Europe, right? And I think we could take this farther. And in the paper, we cite this quote from Applebaum where they note that, you know, autocracy isn't a genetic trait. It's culture and language and religion. They don't produce autocracy or democracy, right? No person or nation is condemned, you know, to autocracy just by, you know, their nature of geography or religion. And the flip side of that is that no nation is guaranteed democracy, right? We have to work really hard at it. But I think the archaeological record shows that people have always worked really hard at this and have been really successful at it.
Well, which came first? I mean, does design for, you know, people being in a collective lead to democracy or does democracy determine design?
I think the design is purposeful and it's meant to facilitate an idea of a system. I approach these kinds of things as, you know, why was this structure built? Like, what was happening at this time? Like, why is it now? Where I work in the southeastern United States, you know, the earliest council houses are we've dated them in central Georgia, and they seem to pop up at a time and begin to be used at a time when there's migration happening. So you have immigrants coming into this region from far away. And the argument that I've been trying to make and making is that council houses and deliberative collective governance was a response. Like that was the solution to now living with new families and people with different ideas, you know, instead of defaulting towards the easy, you know, the quote unquote easy route of autocracy, you know, they decided like we're going to, you know, build new institutions as a response to immigration and population growth and living with diverse peoples in our community. And the way we're going to make sure that this works and the way that we're going to be able to quell tension is through deliberation and consensus.
That's a hopeful note to end on.
Like I said, I like to come at a lot of this as like very hopeful.
Look, I'm never going to look at a circular building the same way. So thank you.
Excellent.
Dr. J. Colin Lulowitz is an anthropologist and assistant professor at the Pennsylvania State University. Coming up after the break, what do modern spaces tell us about ourselves? Moving from ancient cities to modern ones, what role does design play in democracies today? Do those ancient design principles hold true? Joining me now is Dr. Jeff Howe, head of the architecture department at the National University of Singapore. Hey, Jeff, thanks for talking today.
Yeah, thank you. Nice to join.
Do you feel like the role of public space in democracy has changed over time? I mean, how do you think about it now as compared to, you know, what we were talking about, which was thousands of years ago?
Yeah. No, I think the role of public space is still critical to democracy. If we look at how democracy works, right? So people have to express their opinion. They need to gather. They need to communicate. Need to engage in debate. They need to kind of make their presence known to the state. And so public space still play that traditional role. But it's just that public space now does not just include the actual physical space. It also includes, you know, the online forum, the social media. So there's a whole other realm of public space that is exists kind of virtually, online, on your device. And they are today they are just as powerful as the actual physical space, and in some way, you know, became even more prevalent in terms of how, you know, people talk to each other, how they are connected to each other. So it has become more complicated, and also the technology has allowed authoritarian state to, you know, monitor people in the public space, right? Oftentimes, space come with surveillance. So even though the space may be there, people are not able to gather. And so we're at a moment, an interesting kind of historical moment in which we're experiencing this kind of disconnect between space and what they're meant to perform and then how democracy work both in physical realm and in the online kind of realm. And that's the whole kind of purpose of kind of public space become sort of diminished.
Well, what's that like for an architect? Because I assume you are interested in the physical.
Oh, absolutely. I think the physical space is still absolutely important. And we have seen in recent, you know, protest movement that, you know, the actual gathering still matters. But a lot of times those gatherings are either facilitated by, you know, social media, your digital device, and also at the same time, the same kind of, you know, digital infrastructure can also stop people from gathering. So, for example, the state can just shut down the internet, and that stops people from communicating with each other. And so things are more complicated today.
When you're traveling, can you read a new place to figure out any clues about the values of that, you know, of that society?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think you can look at how your elaborate buildings are, which is an indication of how the society kind of value the importance of that particular building. If you go to Tokyo, you know, obviously there's a history of the imperial presence. You know, the center of the city is still the palace, right? So we can read into the history of the city in terms of what it used to be, you know, before it became a democracy. You can travel to Beijing, you know, Tiananmen Square. You know, you can understand the history of the place. And then at the same time, the square is still there, but it's not a functioning democracy, right? These places do tell stories, and you know, stories from the past, from the present, and where things are going. And they're really fascinating to look at.
That's so fascinating. I mean, what are the modern, in modern autocratic societies, is there telltale architecture? Is it just cameras? What do you look for?
Yeah, so it's hard to tell now. So the line has blurred between, you know, the appearance and how spaces actually function, right? So if you go to a Chinese city, for example, it's just as vibrant and colorful, in some way even more vibrant and colorful than a lot of cities in sort of liberal democracy, right? But it doesn't suggest how the spaces are actually governed, right? And so there's a kind of disconnect between sort of the appearance of spaces and then how they actually function in a active democracy. And this is how like the state can control a narrative, how they can control what people remembers, what people know. And so I think that come back to, again, the question of democracy is that, a public space, a functioning public spaces where these kind of story can be told. And that required not just the actual physical artifact, but also the actual conversation, right? People speaking up about what might have been marginalized, what might have been forgotten. And so the actual speech, I think, is still critical. And this is, I think, where we need to be concerned with, when things have been erased, people are being marginalized, and stories are not being told.
That's a great point. And I think it's really interesting because it suggests that, even if a space looks a certain way, like it's colorful or welcoming or democratic looking, you have to ask yourself, who's the author of that story and what is the story they're trying to tell?
Absolutely.
Dr. Jeff Howe, head of the Architecture Department at the National University of Singapore. Thank you for joining me today. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
This episode was produced by Rasha Aridi. And if you like the show, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. It really does help. And if you listen on Spotify, you can also leave us comments, which we always read. Thanks for listening. I'm Flora Lichtman.